Well, it's ages since I've given a talk, I think, so you'll forgive me if I miss out things. One of the things about being old is that you do forget things occasionally. And it's obvious I'm old age. I can't fake it, can I? I'm really old. 86, after all, is not far off 90. And it's odd because inside I don't feel 86. Outside, physically, yes, I do. I'm aware that I can't do what I used to be able to do. I was thinking, oh, it'd be lovely to run across the lawn and jump and do a cartwheel. But I can't do things like that. And I used to love cycling when I was first at Tararoka in my 60s and early 70s. I used to cycle all over the place. And I can't do that now because I wouldn't be able to see well enough, apart from physical. So, though I still do physical things, I do cook for the community occasionally. I do pace myself. I get things ready and then I go and lay down and then come back and finish off what I'm doing. So that's the way I can do it. But I'm not sure when we're going to have a lot more people whether I'd still be able to do that. And I think it's really difficult when you're very young to realise what it's like to be old. In fact, it's impossible. I mean, there's so much time, isn't there? The space seems to be going on forever, and time. But when you're old, it's like Tongkapar's poem, A Flower, etc. Time goes so quickly, and I do find difficulty with dates for that reason, that time just goes so fast. So I have to keep looking at my watch. I was thinking about the young and how at that when you're young, you don't realise that the demon of impermanence is lurking behind you. He's just lurking there, but you don't notice him. But you do when you're older. There's no question about that. You know he's lurking behind you. And actually, I think of him as a friend these days, the demon of impermanence. I find that that he is a friend. Without him, we wouldn't be alive. So I feel that's really important to know about him and say, let's make friends. And I was thinking, let's just think what I need to say next. Yes, I was thinking about old age. I'm wearing hearing aids, though I've not got them on, otherwise you might not hear me so well. And I also can't see so well, though slightly better than I did because I had a laser treatment on my right eye, gave me more light, which is a big help. I'm having difficulty seeing my writing, but not too bad. I was thinking, I don't think stronger glasses would help my sight, but never mind. And I do have to concentrate more because I can't hear so well and I can't see so well. It does make a lot of difference. And I think it's made me more mindful as well because I have to be more mindful when I can't see so well. I have to look at where I'm going. It does make a big difference. Anyway, I'm going to read a poem of mine about time passing. It's called The Delicate Copper. It's the Delicate Copper Beach. It's called Time Passing. The Delicate Copper Beach. Leaves say, look how I am growing, glowing in the spring, sunshine and rain. Come autumn, my leaves will turn like fire, will burn like fire, drift away from it, my branches to settle and wither in the soil. Come spring once more, my delicate leaves will sparkle, will startle you into delight. So that's, I have a copper beach at Tararoka where I'm going to have my ashes, and I often look at, it's a beautiful tree, and I often look at it and think, that's where I'm having my ashes. I do think about that. And I do love beauty, and I like the colours of autumn and spring very much. And I still can see them. I can look out my window and see the colours. I can do that still. And I love listening to beautiful music, as Samantha Badri knows, because she hears it sometimes. I think I like it even more now that I can't see so well, as I can't read so well. It's more difficult. And I love reading, I love poetry, and that's really important to me as well. And I've changed my visualization practice. Probably a few people know this. And I had Amitabha with me for over 20 years, and he's been a really good friend. But I have deserted him. But he has helped me. I think he's helped me with his kindness, his love, and his distinguishing wisdom. What seems to happen is that I really want to see somebody, really want to see them properly, and I feel he's helped me to really see people individually, as individuals, and I think that's really, really important. And I'm actually feeling quite sad that I can't see people so well. Unless it's a very good light, I find it very difficult to see their expressions. And that makes me sad. If they're across the room from me, I cannot see them, as I cannot see any of you, except, you know, that you're people. I can't see any distinguishing marks, which is, it makes me feel a bit sad. But if you're close to me in a good light, then I can see you now more than I could. And I wrote a poem about my sight because I thought it might help my community, because it is difficult, because it's very odd, AMD is very odd, it's not like you're normally blind or anything like that. So how do I see? Well, seeing for me is strange. Words, for instance, at times play games with me, though they don't so much at the moment. The words or letters disappear. At others, they shuffle along. That is impossible. Seeing people is strange too. Unless I'm next to them, their faces disappear in a kind of mist or merge into the background. I cannot see their expressions or know how they are feeling. I do not recognize my own community members when they are sitting at a cafe. I sit in my comfortable chair, feeling relaxed. Patterns of leaves appear on the wall. Could be any kind of pattern, not always leaves. I can look out my window. There is the weeping ash, the cedar tree, not far away, and beyond that, our retreat center. Now I must stop. Words are beginning to disappear. They don't quite so much now as they used to, I'm really pleased to say, because of that laser treatment. But I sent the poem to Sideview, which is the magazine of the AMD Society, and they printed it because they really thought it might help other people to see they're not alone in how they see. Because it is quite odd, it's not. It's odder than you'd think. And they happily printed it. So now I choose Vajradhini as my practice, which is very new for me because it's a new practice, but it's so very different from Amitabha. But actually, when I think back, Vajradhini has been there a long while. When I was in Croydon for a year, I did an etching of him, of her rather. And then when I came to Tauralokha, I did a woodcut, and I used to sell it for funds for Tauralokha. I think a few people have got them in the old days. Yes. And I think I gave a talk about him, or her, at one time. But what I really felt about her at that time was her freedom, her energy and her freedom. I felt she was really free, and I found that very inspiring, even though there wasn't even a sadhana at that time of Vajrayogini anyway, but I probably would have still chosen Amitabha at the time when I became ordained. But she was very important to me even then. But I didn't expect I will actually take her up as a practice. But I did. I came on a convention 4 years ago and I fell in love with her then. And I took her home. She's about that size and she's very beautiful. She's the Karo practice, which is the practice that she's stamping on greed and hatred. And I really like that, the idea of somebody stamping on greed and hatred. And of course, if you stamp on greed and hatred and get rid of them, you can also get rid of delusion, can't you? So they go together after all. You can't do them both. Yes, so... And I went on... I've been on two Vajrayogini retreats and I really enjoyed them. And the practice is very strong. The pujas are very strong. And when I've been on solitary retreats, I've done a puja every night. And I really enjoyed that. But I found... I think she's really great for my logical mind to think of all those skulls around her. 50 skulls or whatever around her neck. And she's got 5 skulls around her head as a headdress. And you can't actually... be logical with that kind of thing. It's impossible. It just is impossible. But she has a great deal of compassion. She's a bodhisattva, after all. So that's, I find, very helpful. So I tried to work with being there for people as much as I can, being really there for them. I try... If somebody irritates me or something irritates me, I try not to blame them. I try to blame myself. That's my irritation. I own it. I try to own it. It doesn't always work, but I try. I do my best. And I don't know how long I live. I think every winter... Well, if I last the winter out, I shall probably last the summer, but that's not necessarily true either. But I do think about that. I do think about age, and after all, I'm getting on for 90. I'm nearer 90 than I am 80 now. That's quite a thought when I think about it. So I've got another poem, actually, that I wrote about Vajrayogini. And I can read it. My sight's not brilliant. Hey, Vajrayogini, creating mayhem with your Vajra chopper, creating love instead of hate, creating contentment instead of greed. Hey, Vajrayogini, those flames of wisdom weaving around you, give us freedom for love and compassion to arise in us, to let go of our old habits, our old conditioning. Hey, Vajrayogini, with your great compassion, your wonderful wisdom, I bow down to you. And letting go is something that I have, that I do try to do, to let go of old habits, to let go of what I've done, just to be me. And that's what I find important for me, to actually just be me, no hats, nothing else, just me. And I enjoy living in a community. I realise... That is what there was a time when I decided not to, but I actually enjoy living in a community. And that is me in old age.